after that blessing, it almost feels like a waste for me to come and stand here and talk to you about Abraham, or Abram, whichever way you want to talk about it. Can you hear me properly? Okay, now it sounds better. Okay. So, who can tell me why it was so easy for Abraham to take Isaac, his son, to be sacrificed? Think about it. Abraham was over 100 years old, and Isaac must have been a teenager. And I probably wanted to murder my teenagers now and again as well. So, anyway, no, jokes aside. When we think about the father of our faith, and I'm sure everybody will say our father of our faith is Abram, or Abraham. And the reason being, we all know that the first covenant was established with him. Should I take a different mic? Is it coming and going, or is it still working properly? Okay. Then it must be me, yeah. Okay. So, anybody asks about who the father of our faith is, will say it's Abraham. Because the first covenant was established with him. And greatly, it's also about the fact exactly that he was willing to sacrifice Isaac, his descendants, because God asked him to do that. And we also read about this in Hebrews, and I want to just quickly bring us up. So by faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should later receive an inheritance, obeyed, and he went out, not knowing where he went. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said that in Isaac shall you, your descendants, be called. This is the image of Abraham that we have. The image, the faithful Abraham. But if you go and read Genesis properly, this is not the way Abraham was. He was a man of little faith. And I'll explain why before you get upset with me about talking about Abram this way. It does say in Genesis 15 verse 6 that of Abraham believed in the Lord and was accounted to him for righteousness. But in reality, he trusted a lot in his own abilities and not in God. And this is why I say he was a man of little faith. And I'll give you some examples. I can give you some examples, and the first one I want to talk to you about is when he was young, married young, God told him to go to Canaan. And yes, in faith, he went to Canaan. Because God promised Canaan would be his country. He arrives there, and what is there? Famine. So he decides to go to Egypt. But he's scared of Pharaoh because he's got a beautiful wife, and he believes that Pharaoh wants his wife, Sarah, or Sarai, as she was called then, to be his wife. So he says to Sarai the following. Genesis 12, verse 11 to 13. I reckon. And it came to pass, when he came near to enter into Egypt, that he said unto Sarai his wife, behold, now, I know you are a fair woman to look upon. Therefore it shall come to pass when the Egyptians shall see you, that they shall say, this is his wife, and they will kill me, but they will save you alive. Say, I pray you, that you are my sister, that it may be well with me for your sake. My soul shall live because of you. So here we see Abraham trusting in his own abilities. In fact, being very deceptive about it, to the point that Pharaoh actually did see her and did want to take her. But God plagued Pharaoh, and he found out about the fact that actually they were married. So he chased him out of Egypt. I think Abraham was very lucky and fortunate to only be chased away, not to be killed. I mean, imagine the consequences if Pharaoh had taken her to be his wife. Here you have a man of God who believes in God that says so in the Bible. And he's being deceptive. Okay, partially deceptive because Sarai was his half-sister, yes. But she was also his wife. Imagine that. You believe in the one true God and you are willing to sacrifice, in a sense, your wife by saying, you're on your own now. So, that's the first example I wanted to share with you. The second example relates to the descendants of Abram. God talks to Abram and he says to him that you're going to become a great nation. You're going to become a multitude. And he decides to by his own plans, to deliver this. If you look at the next piece in Genesis 15. And Abram said, Lord God, what will you give me, seeing I go childless? And the heir of my house is this, Eliezer of Damascus. And Abram said, behold, to me you have given no descendants, and lo, one born in my house is my heir. So here, Abram makes a decision and says he will create his own descendants through probably a slave born in his house or a servant born in his house. By now, God has already promised him twice he's going to be a great nation. And despite that promise of God, he still tries to make his own plan. But as we see, the Lord says here in verse 4, and behold, the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, this shall not be your heir, but he that shall come forth out of your own body shall be your heir. So, Abram says, it's got to come out of my own body. So what he does, he has a child by Hagar, a maidservant from Sarai, and they have Ishmael. Once again, his own plans. And it almost ends disastrously because jealousy erupts between Sarah and Hagar, and Hagar and Ishmael needs to be chased away eventually. So, by now I'm sure God must be very frustrated with Abram. And he decides probably, I'm going to put it in your face. I'm going to change your name to Abraham, which means father of multitude. So every time anybody speaks to you, he's going to be in your face that you are father of multitude. I'm sure by now you'll get the message if you keep hearing your name, Abraham. But not just that. He institutes a circumcision. He institutes a sign that every man shall know that whenever you go to empty your bladder, you have no choice but to see this. It's a sign that God promises him a great nation. More in your face you cannot have. But, despite this, we see that still Abram does not believe God. In fact, in God's presence, he laughs in God's face when God tells him, Sarah is going to have a child. By now she's over 90 years old. If you look at Genesis 17, first verse, it says that, and Abram was 90 years old and 99 years old. The Lord appeared to Abram. So he was in his presence. The Lord was with him right there. In verse 7 it says, then Abraham fell upon his face and laughed and said in his heart, shall a child be born unto him that is 100 years old, and shall Sarah that is 90 years old bear? Now, I don't know if you've fallen down laughing, but it's not that emoji that just has a little smiley face on. It's that emoji with the tears running down and rolling on the side, rolling on the floor laughing. That is the type of laughter that's happening here, and it's in God's presence. I mean, by now, I'm sure if it was me, I would have struck him down, said, sorry, I'm going to find somebody else to create my great nation. But for some reason, God persists with Abram. He persists, despite the fact that, yet again, Abram pulls the same stunt he did in Egypt with Abimelech. again he asked Sarah to tell Abimelech to be that his sister. Let's have a look here. Genesis 20. And Abimelech said unto Abraham, what was your thinking that you have done this thing? And Abraham said, because I thought surely the fear of God is not in this place. And they will slay me for my wife's sake. And yet indeed she is my sister. She's the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife. And it came to pass, when God caused me to wander from my father's house, that I said unto her, this is your kindness which you shall show unto me. Every place where we shall come, say of me, he's my brother. Find it interesting, we're just saying about, I'm no longer a slave to fear. And here you've got the greatest man of faith saying, he's being afraid. He was more afraid of the people than of God. And the interesting thing is, he tries to put the blame on God. He said, when God caused me to wander, well, it's God's fault I'm wandering around. I need to protect myself somehow. So, I must say that, think about it, Sarah, who was now more than 90 years old, must have been an extremely beautiful woman for people to actually want to still. I mean, Abimelech took her into his harem. So beautiful she was. So, that's just a side comment. She must have been an extremely beautiful woman. So, I'll give you all these examples of where Abraham was not a great man of faith. So, how do you marry this up with what it says in the New Testament? The Old Testament sketches this person who didn't fully trust in God, who didn't trust him, even though God gave him all these promises. But we do talk about Abraham, the father of our faith. And Hebrews does call him a man of faith. And we know that he was willing to sacrifice Isaac after this period. I think the first thing we need to look at is realize if we look at Genesis 15 verse 6, it talks here about the fact. It says, and he believed in the Lord, and he counted into him for righteousness. I think the mistake that we all make is the difference between belief and faith. James says, demons believe and they tremble. Belief is different to faith. Because if you look at the dictionary, faith is two things. Belief in the existence of something and trusting in that existence. You need to have both belief in that God exists and you need to trust in God. So Abraham definitely believed God existed. I mean, he saw him. He was in his presence. But he didn't fully trust God with everything that he did. He relied on his own abilities. If you don't believe the dictionary, I can show it to you in Hebrews as well. Hebrews talks about, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, which I call trust, and the evidence of things not seen, belief. We need the evidence of things not seen is believing in God. And having hope for the things that are promised by God, that is the trust that we have in God. So Abraham had the belief, he didn't have the trust to the full extent of what's required. To understand a bit more what was lacking with Abram, I wanted to share with you what trust is. Trust consists of three things. When you trust somebody, it's because you know they are capable, they are able to do something. You know that they are sincere. They say what they do. You know they're credible. They do what they say. The moment you identify that in somebody, you are willing to trust that person. Now you're going to tell me, but hang on a minute, God has all these qualities. And that's 100% correct. God is capable to do anything. He does what he says and he says what he does. The problem is, you need to experience and know that. It's not good enough that God is that way. It's about your experience of God that allows you to trust him. you need to experience God doing things. You need to experience God telling you He's going to do stuff and then seeing Him do those things. That's when you build up the trust in God. So, and this is where Abram's big failing comes. God takes him on this long journey, and we spoke about all the occasions. God takes him on this long journey, the wanderings that he said. God made me to wander. Well, it's a good reason why, because he needed Abram to learn to trust him. And every time he was put in a situation where he had to trust God, what does he do? He doesn't trust God. He trusts in his own ability. So God puts him in a new situation that he needs to trust God, and what does he do? He doesn't trust God. He trusts in his own ability. So he does not grow in his faith. He does not grow. So I can relate to this a lot. I don't have a gifting of faith. To be honest, I struggle tremendously with faith. My wife, Anli, she has a great gifting of faith. She can implicitly believe that God will do what he says and what he promises. I struggle. And probably much to do with the person I am, who believes I can do anything. But that's also a bad thing. But God takes me on these journeys as well. He takes me on these journeys overseas. And how often, many, many times, I've landed in a country, and I switch on my phone, the first thing I do, I get these ping, ping, ping WhatsApp messages. There's some issue at home with a family or etc. And I'm stuck in an airport and I can do nothing about it. God forces me into those places where I have no choice but to trust Him. I'll give you an example. I landed in Turkey and the message comes through, Elizabeth, my daughter, has a scalpel fell and cut her leg and it doesn't want to stop bleeding. What must we do? I don't know. She's in Pretoria. Hanley's in the Cape. I'm in Turkey. What must I do? You know, that time you really start to trust in God, you know. It's up to God now to sort this out, you know. Anyway, so I can fully relate to Abram. Because he probably had other giftings. But it doesn't mean to say we can't build up that ability, and that's what God works on us for. The thing is, we need to allow God to intervene in our lives. We need to allow God to take that place. When I get into situations, you know what the first thing that I do? What can I do? How can I fix it? And then probably, instead of first thing doing, okay, I've got a situation. God, please show me what I need to do. Show me what you want me to do in this situation. That's not my go-to. I'll be honest. It doesn't mean to say that God doesn't want us to do things. But once you've heard God's voice, then you do what God expects of you. Don't do before you ask God. I sometimes wonder if Sarah would not have fallen pregnant a lot sooner had Abraham learned the lesson a lot sooner. He wouldn't have to wander all over the place. He would have inherited Canaan a lot sooner if it wasn't for his stubbornness and inability to trust in God. So that's the primary thing I wanted to share with you tonight, but there's another important thing that relates a lot to this. It relates to the fact that if you look at all those situations up to Isaac, you'll find that God promises a lot of things, tells Abraham a lot of things, but not once does Abraham say, affirm this, say, yes, God will do this. He doesn't talk about that at all. He, in fact, does the opposite. The whole point of laughing in God's face. So, the difference here is when God asked him to sacrifice Isaac, he did it differently. We see here, Genesis. And Isaac spoke unto Abraham his father and said, my father. And he said, here I am, my son. And he said, behold the fire and the wood, But where is the lamb for a burnt offering? And Abraham said, My son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So they went both of them together. I'm sure you're going to tell me, well, what was Abraham going to say to his son? Sorry, dude, you're the sacrifice, you're going to be the lamb. No, but I think there's more to this than just that. When Abraham said that, he heard that as well. He needed to believe that as well, because I'm sure he didn't want to sacrifice Isaac. He needed implicitly to believe that God would provide a sacrificial lamb. And this thing, you need to speak the promises of God, the hope in the substance of things hoped for. You need to speak it to become part of you. In summary, what I want to say, the two things that are important in terms of the journey to faith, I believe, on the next slide. You need to allow God to deliver you. You need to God to execute His plans in your life, not you to do it. You need to allow it. So often we don't. And you need to affirm His plans and affirm His promises. Speak them. And it's a cycle. The more you affirm His plans, the more you're going to allow Him to intervene in your life. If I keep saying God will take me out of the situation, the more I'm going to rely and allow Him to take me out of the situation. So, I think it's apt that we actually have communion tonight. I'm struggling with the English word for communion there. It's apt that we've got communion now, because we spoke about the circumcision, and communion is a physical manifestation of our faith. Faith in the resurrection. And I thought if we could maybe take the wine and the bread, that we can maybe affirm our faith through the use of the communion.